dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We are privileged on this program to be blessed with regularity, usually weekly, by the extraordinary intelligence of Diana West. She is a longtime syndicated columnist, a pundit, I think it's fair to say, by any measure, a woman who has written three really important books, The Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and most recently, The Red Thread, a search for ideological drivers behind the anti-Trump conspiracy. She is going, I hope, in the course of a full, very special hour-long conversation to drill down on the insights of these books as they relate to the big news of the day. That is, of course, that today, as we speak, in prospect, as you're listening, an accomplished fact, the House Judiciary Committee is to take up the some 300 pages of, well, I guess, the prelude to an indictment served up by Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and his Democratic colleagues on that committee. And I'm very keen to find out, having been overseas for a week, where things stand at the moment and where they're headed. And I can think of no one better to share insights into all of this than our guest, Diana West. Diana, so good to have you. Welcome back. And thank you for giving us so generously of your time today.
No, thank you. It's wonderful to be with you and trying to make sense of what's happening to us in our poor country right now.
Well, please do. Maybe we can start with sort of the particulars of the immediate situation and then back the lens up as we talk about what's the bigger picture. But just how have we gotten to this particular pass with respect to the House, the processes that have been pursued, Adam Schiff's peculiar role, and the various witnesses that he called to conjure up this charge that the president has engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors for which he should be impeached?
Yes, well, in this strange period, I think the particulars are extraneous to the big picture. I mean, yes, there have been these hearings. We have seen a parade of very strange witnesses in a very strange case. But in this essential fabrication of an impeachment inquiry, fabrication of high crimes and misdemeanors, all of it is about theatrical effect. We've heard of show trials from totalitarian societies where prosecutors and judges go through the motions and essentially prosecute politics in a legalistic setting. And essentially, that is what we've been experiencing here. And so we can go through the particulars of how it is that the State Department or the Foreign Service, the diplomats of the United States, don't like the fact that the foreign policy set by President Trump is not in accord with everything they've been taught and everything they've been implementing for their lives and the lives of their forebears in service. But it doesn't really add up to anything except this struggle to prevent President Trump from executing the will of the people who sent him to the White House. And essentially, it's the same struggle that we have seen take place in different places in the Washington power structure that we now see play out on Capitol Hill. So the impeachment itself is almost, or the details of the impeachment itself almost become, they could be filled in by almost anything. It's a process that we're watching, and it gets more and more abusive to both the president and to our rights as American citizens. And just to throw out one of these particulars, which I don't think is getting enough attention yet, and which broke last night. This the incidental detail that Adam Schiff procured the phone records of the president's personal attorney, Rudolph Giuliani. He procured all manner of phone records and communications of Devin Nunes, the ranking member of the committee, and one of the one of Nunes's aides, Derek Harvey. We also have all manner of examination of the private papers of John Solomon, the reporter, who's been very instrumental in breaking a lot of the news along the way. So we're seeing abuses of power, again, to prosecute a political action and dress it up as some sort of congressional procedure. So this is very alarming.
Let's just stop for a moment and ponder what you've just said about the acquisition of these materials. Now, I'm assuming, I don't know if we know, perhaps you do, but I'm assuming that the contents of those communications, not just the fact that they took place, has been made available to Adam Schiff somehow. And if so, questions arise as to who could have done that. Was it the communications services themselves, Verizon or whomever, or was it the National Security Agency, the intelligence community of the United States, and pursuant to what authority, especially if it's one politician versus another, both of whom have very senior positions on the Oversight Committee of the intelligence community. What do we know about the particulars at this moment?
Well, we don't know at this moment very much. And you raise a very important question because, again, if we're looking at the same struggle play out in different arenas in Washington to get Trump, and now it's in Congress, the consistent player has been the intelligence community. I mean, we go back to January of 2017 when Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, we later find for sure, was the leaker of the Steele dossier, of the meeting among the heads, Brennan, Comey, Clapper, with President Obama in early January 2017, that then becomes the CNN hook on the Steele dossier that precedes the rollout of the Steele dossier. We see the intelligence community all over this. We've also had recent revelations, speaking of James Clapper. Not only was he the leaker that essentially set the public phase of this fabrication to get the president with the whole Steele dossier Russia collusion narrative in January. We've also recently learned about there's an amazing lawsuit going on against several media organizations and Stefan Halper, who is a very important informant of the intelligence community, sent into the Trump team. And you know, that's a whole complicated story in and of itself. But I raise it at the moment because in a recent interview that Svetlana Lokova, the plaintiff in this case, gave, she discussed how it was that she was smeared as General Flynn's paramour, lover, by Stefan Halper, by these media organizations, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, MSNBC, and Washington Post, essentially, again, looking at intelligence community activity in pushing the story. You see the same kinds of people involved.
Diana, we have to hold that thought. Our conversation will continue after a very short break right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back for the second installment of our hour-long conversation with Diana West, a dear friend, a cherished colleague, and an extraordinary, well, national treasure for her deep knowledge about how enemies within have operated, in some cases, for decades inside this country's government, media, academia, business elites, and more. And we're probing this phenomenon at work at the moment in the context of the most recent moment or phase of the coup to remove Donald Trump from power. Dinah, before the break, you were introducing a name of a British historian who has studied relevant topics closely. Continue that thought.
Yes. Well, it's part of this extraordinary wide net that we see spanning the globe in this effort by elites to, as you say, affect this coup, to take out this president in particular, and cancel the will of the American people. I mean, again, the whole thing essentially is about canceling out the democratic process, because he is only, Trump is the manifestation of that process. So it's important to remember, this is not just about one man, this is about our country. Christopher Andrew is known to students of espionage history as the doyen of the British historians, and he has been involved with major presentations of government laundered narratives of espionage in Britain, whether it's the history, the official history of MI5, for example, or the Matrokin Archive, which was a compilation of copied documents by a KGB archivist named Matrokin, who smuggled out papers that Andrew edited. He's very well known. He's very widely respected. And he, at Cambridge, he was very involved with a student, his student, a woman by the name of Svetlana Lokova, a Russian emigre who became a British citizen and studied under him and was very friendly with him. They were going to be co-authors on a book. I mean, this was a close collegial relationship. I bring this up because the extraordinary kind of confluence of intelligence world and getting Donald Trump is such a big thread here. In early 2017, we have James Clapper initiating these leaks. We have also the effort to dirty up and destroy General Flynn as another means of getting Trump, General Flynn having been named as Trump's national security advisor at that point. It's a very complex story here, but what we see again is in the recent efforts by the excellent Sidney Powell, General Flynn's attorney now, finally, who should be attorney general. There's my vote for Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell made a filing last month, October 2019, whereby she is requesting phone records. We're talking about Rudy Giuliani phone records. She is requesting the phone records of James Clapper to confirm his contacts with Washington Post reporter David Ignatius, especially on January 10th, 2017, which is, again, the same key period where we see the Steele dossier starting to emerge and Clapper leaking on it. January 10th, 2017, quote, when Clapper told Ignatius in words to the effect of, take the kill shot on Flynn. So here we have the director of national intelligence allegedly telling an important Washington Post columnist with deep CIA relationship to take the kill shot on Flynn.
By which he meant not physically murder him, but using David Ignatius's position as a Washington Post columnist to take out politically and in terms of his role as the incoming national security advisor to the president, a distinguished military officer, Lieutenant General Mike Flynn. And let me just add, while I'm at it, Dinah West, to do it not just to get to rough up Donald Trump, but also to take out someone who knew intimately where the proverbial bodies were buried inside the intelligence community. And as national security advisor, would have been a mortal threat to these conspirators and the enterprise that they led.
Certainly that would be high in their minds, yes. So we have that going on. And then General Flynn, meanwhile, in Britain, from Christopher Andrew, is being portrayed as someone who fell into the wiles of this Russian honeypot, namely Svetlana Lokova, a complete smear that was launched by Christopher Andrew in the pages of the Times of London. He wrote a piece about his own colleague, his own student, a co-author, that is demonstrably false in terms of making all kinds of claims that she has already been able to completely rebut in her amazing brief, which I recommend to people. They can find it online. But the point being that Christopher Andrew, with his own ties to British intelligence, is making the same kind of play, creating a fabricated story about Flynn as part of this larger effort to get Trump. And when she confronted him and asked him to retract, she said this only just recently last week. She said that he replied to her he would not retract the story. He replied to her that he was under great pressure. Now, he did not go into detail that she revealed. She said she did not know what he meant exactly. But you have someone with these ties to the British state making these kinds of claims. And then the follow-on bit would be that he was also, Christopher Andrew, was also trying to get Svetlana Lakova to meet with Stefan Halper, to meet with David Ignatius. In other words, the same players are being seen in different venues concocting different threads, different chapters, different ancillary vectors, if you will, on this same serpentine thing that was this fabrication that Trump was involved with the Russians.
Right. Dino, let's pause just for a moment, because there's so much here, and I'm sure for the average listener, it seems like lots of dots. And what I have always found extraordinary about your work is you have repeatedly demonstrated a capacity to connect those dots based on the facts, based on the actual connection between them, but bringing it to light in a way that helps make sense of what otherwise seems to be just some sort of chaotic and unclear pattern. So just to put a fine point on it, what you've described and what you, of course, lay out in great detail in the first edition of your book, The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers in the Anti-Trump Conspiracy, is a degree of, well, let's just say, extra constitutional, if not actually completely illegal activity by U.S. intelligence agency leadership. You've mentioned several times now James Clapper, the director of national intelligence. I think there was passing mention there of another fellow who seems to play a prominent role in all of this as well, John Brennan, at the time the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. You've mentioned some of their sort of operatives like Steph Halper, who have played roles seemingly in connection with British intelligence, as was the Steele dossier. I'm fascinated by a woman who's not come to much attention in this connection, but who was the chief of station, the top Central Intelligence Agency officer in the United Kingdom at the time all of this was going on, who had actually previously been in that role, had gone back to Langley to work in other capacities for John Brennan. And then, in the midst of this portentous time, is back on the job, something that's, I'm told, very unusual in the intelligence circles, back on the job, sort of being the top person for the agency in the United Kingdom. Her name is Gina Haspel, and she is currently the director of the Central Intelligence Agency under Donald Trump. I'm struck by the fact that there seems to be so much here, and yet we're talking about something totally different. There's something that is preoccupying the Congress, that is the fixation of the media, that is consuming all of the oxygen, if you will, in official Washington, at least. Namely, did Donald Trump say something untoward in a conversation with the president of Ukraine? Please connect away on these dots.
Well, I think that what you've raised is something that strikes me very hard, in the place where instinct and survival instinct comes in, the various reflexes. The whole Ukraine story seems to be just this ball of fire that descended from on high to distract us, frankly, from this intelligence community affected coup. It is such an anomalous kind of event in terms of Russia collusion, Russia collusion, Russia collusion. Stop. Ukraine. And what we've seen is, I do believe, good people on the Republican side take the bait, if you will, in terms of starting to just change direction and seek Ukraine. So we get to a point where in these hearings in the last week or so, we have a woman come before the Schiff committee. Her name is Fiona Hill. And she essentially gives us the new narrative, which is another false narrative, namely that Democrats believe Russia interfered with the election, while Republicans believe Ukraine interfered with the election.
All right. We have to pause. Diana West, this is a perfect stepping off point for our next phase of this conversation. We'll be talking more about Fiona Hill and the narratives that are being falsely promoted by various folks, and for what reason. That and much more with Diana West, the author of American Betrayal, The Red Thread, and more right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting, I'm delighted to say, at length with Diana West, a longtime contributor to the public policy debate through syndicated columns, through her three very important books, Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and The Red Thread, through her appearances on this program, and so much more. You can find all of it collected at dianawest.net, her superb blog. And I hope that you will take the time to study up on some of the background to what we're talking about today that has filled the pages of particularly American Betrayal and The Red Thread. It, as I say, it is a dot-connecting experience, unlike many others. And Diana, you introduced just before we broke Fiona Hill, one of the individuals that featured prominently in the House Intelligence Committee hearings. And I'd like you to finish sort of introducing the false narrative, as you put it, that she put into play and how it fits into this larger seeming determined effort to deflect attention from the anti-Trump conspirators, what they were doing, where they were doing it, how they were doing it, and what that actually does to further underscore the, well, show trial character of what's being done to President Trump at the moment.
Yes. I think that what the best, sort of the simplest way to understand all of these things is to just try to hang on to the initial revelations that we have of the intelligence community, including our security services, namely the FBI, the Justice Department, conspiracy against first the Trump campaign and then the Trump presidency. This really is where we need to return our focus, how this was done, who was involved. This also involves going back to the campaign itself when we first see the rise of the Trump is a Russian puppet, Trump is a Russian oligarch narrative, which begins in, I believe, July of 2016, when we first really start to see this. This also is when we first start to see the emails from the DNC, not Hillary Clinton's private server, that's a separate issue. The DNC emails and later the Podesta emails that showed the American people the corruption at going on, the collusion, if you will, between Hillary Clinton and the DNC to win the nomination, and then just the rife hypocrisy and just ugliness of the whole inner workings of the Clinton world and the DNC that were revealed by WikiLeaks, by Julian Assange, now rotting, really rotting and being destroyed in a British prison incommunicado. The best witness we have to what really happened in the summer of 2016, who has not been interviewed by Mueller, by Schiff, by Nunes, by anyone, to find out what really happened when these emails came out. And the Democrats and the media turned that into the Russians did it. The Russians hacked. Now, getting back to Trump's July 25th, 2019 phone call that we're supposed to impeach him over, the favor he was asking was directly related to this. This is something that we lose in this hunt for Ukraine, this hunt for Giuliani, et cetera, that is now even more frantic deflection, I believe, from, again, this initial mechanism. Trump was asking about CrowdStrike, the company that comes in hired by the DNC and the famous law firm Perkins Coie, the Democratic law firm, to look at the server, to actually swap out the server. The server's gone. We don't. I don't know how many pieces it is. I don't know what the bottom of what river it is. I don't know if it's in Ukraine. That seems far-fetched, but who knows? We don't know what happened to the server. They changed it. They gave a redacted draft report that blamed Russian intelligence for these releases of Democratic National Committee emails and later the Podesta devices. The point there is that the FBI never had possession of any of this and simply took the Democrats' narrative and ran with it. And it has been consistently reinforced by everyone from Robert Mueller, of course, to Adam Schiff, William Barr, the media, and on and on.
And the narrative, Dinah, just an important data point, the narrative that the Democrats pushed was generated by CrowdStrike, this private sector entity that they had engaged. One of its founders was Dmitry Aperovich, I believe it is, a Russian expat. The other was Sean Henry, who, it turns out, was formerly an assistant director of the FBI.
And a Mueller protege.
And a man who apparently was sufficiently highly regarded that when he said to his colleagues, former colleagues at the Bureau, you don't need to look at this, we've got it covered, they fell into line. So this very peculiar situation, which we've talked about for some time, Dinah, of having essentially the FBI failing to do the most basic forensic analysis that would prove or more likely disprove the contention that this was other than an inside job, namely that it was prompted by, you know, Russian hacking, was dispensed with because apparently, you know, an insider turned it off. This is troubling on so many different levels. And I think, again, just to come back to some of the main connecting tissue here that is so vital to making sense of what you're talking about, Diana, there's so many different elements of this. There's so many different players. There's so much to be astonished by. But it comes down to this, it seems. You had the active collusion of people in very prominent positions within the intelligence community, including not only the Director of National Intelligence and the Central Intelligence Agency director, but senior levels of the FBI, James Comey among them, engaged in trying to take down first a candidate for the presidency, subsequently the elected candidate, then president-elect, and subsequently the actual sitting president of the United States. That's a story that it would seem should be receiving our full focus. And yet it's getting scarcely any at all, other than perhaps something from the Inspector General of the Justice Department. That very much remains to be seen, given his past performance. And of course, John Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, who is supposed to be looking into all of this, and hopefully will do so with the strong support of the Attorney General, Bill Barr. But have I got that right? Is that basically the conclusion that you've derived from the analysis of all of these different elements and pieces?
Yes, that is exactly where our attention should be focused. But that focus is essentially shattered by every subsequent event that takes us farther and farther from that, including events and actions initiated by certainly the Trump Justice Department, whether it was Sessions as Attorney General or William Barr. I mean, this is part of the sort of the horror of the swamp, as it essentially has locked interlocking agencies down to prevent this obvious point of conspiratorial genesis from being just absolutely put out there for the American people to see. It is my theory that President Trump has an awareness of the importance of these actions in the summer of 2016. And when he sees his own government, the agencies of the executive branch, doing everything they can to bury it, perhaps that is why he is looking elsewhere in the world to attempt to get outside swamp-controlled channels and find out what happened and how it worked. I mean, this is, I think, what is going on with some of his own efforts to find out what's going on and how this was affected.
And part of the campaign that is underway now to remove him from office under the guise of this impeachment proceeding focused on Ukraine, obviously, is to try to shut down that source of information as well, isn't it? This all makes perfect sense if you actually can start from the proposition that there is an ideological driver, as you call it, behind what's going on here. We've talked about this at length in the past, Dinah, but just very briefly, we have just a couple minutes before we have to take another pause. Remind us why you believe there is a perceptible ideological dimension to what's behind this conspiracy to remove him from office.
Just very briefly, the mechanism by which all of these very powerful officials have been moving to remove President Trump from office is essentially anti-democratic. There's no reason to be doing this kind of conspiratorial behavior when we have elections every 2 to 4 years, 6 years for senator, but we move people through the system, and that's the American way. All of the people involved in this are using extra-constitutional, illegal, probably seditious, perhaps treasonous methods to remove the president. It seems very treasonous to me, but this is not even discussed. Where we are is watching people who came out of very intense left-wing politics as young people and not so young people moving into positions of power, essentially being embedded as anti-democratic, small d, democratic officials willing to have the ends justify the means, affect social justice, so-called, or essentially redistribution of power and wealth according to their visions, fundamental transformations. And, you know, we can talk names and dates. I mean, these are very open leftists, whether they were communists in their youth, whether they still adhere to very Marxist beliefs. I mean, these are your James Comeys and your John Brennans, your Nellie Oars, your Strobe Talbots. I mean, these are people who believe in a government by elites, a world government. They essentially have no interest in protecting the Constitution that protects our rights as citizens to choose our own destiny. And that is what unites them all.
Dinah West, we have to take another final break. When we come back, we want to work through, where do we go from here? Right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for the fourth and final installment of this hour-long conversation with Dinah West, in which we have the privilege of really trying in some detail and at some length to go through the myriad elements that have made up this bewilderingly complex and confusing saga that has piecemeal over the past 3 years begun to emerge concerning the efforts to first block the candidacy of Donald Trump, to sabotage his transition to the presidency, and then to remove him from office once he was sworn in. There's so much evidence here. And Diana, even with this longer form, we've only scratched the surface, but I do appreciate so much your working through several of the component parts thoroughly, and I think confirming what we have come to understand, namely that what we're being subjected to in terms of this show trial, as you call it, has very little to do with the real high crimes and misdemeanors that have been taking place for years at the hands of not President Donald Trump, but the hands of those in the anti-Trump conspiracy. Which brings me to sort of this question, Diana. Most Americans find this hard to believe because we have been indoctrinated, really, to understand that there is no such thing as enemies of our country within the United States. External foes, yes, but within the United States, no. And your research, your extraordinary documentation, particularly in American Betrayal, of the efforts in the past to expose and neutralize enemies within is so important for us to understand in terms of that present sort of incapacity. So quickly, tell us that story and why it matters so much at the moment.
Yes, well, there was a very fascinating moment when the Soviet Union was beginning to dissolve in the early 1990s, when a man who was essentially charged with being the expert on North America, American studies, if you will, in the Soviet Politburo, a man by the name of Arbatov, came to the United States and essentially told us something very important that I doubt hardly anyone really appreciated what he was saying. He was saying that what the Russians were going to do was essentially take away our enemy. And, you know, every great empire needs an enemy, he said, and we are taking that enemy away. Well, people took this as kind of a lovely sentiment, I suppose. But when you actually drill down on it and realize what had been going on for decades...
He didn't mean that they were going to stop being an enemy.
Exactly. Take away the concept. So if communism doesn't exist, if the Soviet Union doesn't exist, we have no enemy. Now, this had been going on for quite some time in America, as you refer to, when in terms of taking the very obvious fact that we have enemies within. Every nation is infiltrated by enemies since the dawn of time. This is what spies do, agents do. We had been trained to look at that process of counterintelligence as something so evil as to be a proof of someone's immorality and worthlessness and just absolutely ready to be ostracized from society. We call that whole process something called McCarthyism. If you even consider that there is an ideology that wishes to consume you or people who wish to execute that ideology and put you in prison and destroy you, you are accused of McCarthyism. And if we were a pre-literate society that had not yet invented the wheel, we could not treat that word with more sort of superstitious power than we do. McCarthyism is the way people stop conversations, they stop thinking, they absolutely commit suicide, truly, politically speaking, with that term. And we've seen it embraced on the right anytime the very thought that there is this age-old drive to destroy this country from within by people beholden, interested, and sympathetic to the Marxist concept of society. This is something we see even from the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, who is constantly railing against McCarthyism. John Solomon, constantly railing against McCarthyism. Tucker Carlson, I mean, everyone on the right has taken McCarthyism as their sword, and they might as well just drive it into themselves, because if you do not appreciate that there is an ideological war so far on that it's practically over and we've practically lost, then you might as well just give up and go off and live off the land, which may be where we have to go eventually. So this is kind of what we see in that Trump conspiracy as well. We see this drive to Marxify this nation totally.
That's the ideological driver at the end of the day. And the exposing of it and the effort to, by exposing it, neutralize it, had, of course, a precedent in the efforts of Joseph McCarthy, a United States senator, who was, as you've documented so well, and Stan Evans and others, destroyed for having done so, to the point where, as you say, his name has now been permanently affixed to the cause of ensuring nobody ever does that again, lest they be McCarthyist in our time. And this is so disheartening because, as you said, Diana, so well, of course, we, like every other country, have enemies within. We are subject not just to espionage. We are subject to influence operations. We are subject to subversion. What is particularly alarming is what Joseph McCarthy established correctly back in his day, is that some of those are not foreign operatives, they're American citizens. And in your book, American Betrayal, you chronicle a number of them and the extraordinary damage they did during and in the years after World War II. And we unfortunately don't have time to develop that thought fully, but just if you could, in the closing 3 minutes, tie that experience in and the necessity for having a clear-eyed, honest examination, investigation, and purge, I guess one might say, of this kind of enemy within, American as well as foreign, perhaps, in this present moment as well.
Yes. Well, when you have a society that is truly permeated by moral relativism, when you have a society that sees Americanism as something evil, which is, again, another one of these propaganda tools of the left, the Constitution itself has been essentially neutralized and discarded by this point, but this is a function of our educational system. It becomes very difficult for anyone to define what is an enemy, because there are no more boundaries, there's no more border to guard, figuratively or literally, and so you are in this kind of morass where anything goes. This makes it very difficult. So when you actually bring up someone who wants to overturn elections, it's hard even to outlaw that. But the importance of it in reestablishing these building blocks of what it is to be an American and what it is to uphold the Constitution could not be more central to any kind of salvation. It may be too late, but this is essentially where we have to go back to. And one of the ways we go back to that, I believe, is going back to these early excavations of the swamp by Senator McCarthy, a great American hero, perhaps our greatest, and a number of others, senators and congressmen on both sides of the aisle, who understood the subversion of the entrance, particularly of covert communists, into the federal government. I mean, this isn't even just, you know, professors or artists. These are people covertly inside the federal government, subverting it from within, in those days for sure, a direct line to a hostile totalitarian foreign power, namely the Soviet Union. We have certainly many spy cases to our day, certainly connected to China. We have other countries and so on who are still trying to subvert us from within, but we're not, and certainly Russia. I think Russia is, you know, contrary to the Democrats' argument, I think Russia is, in fact, certainly an actor benefiting from all of this, and connections to the Russians have probably not been established in the correct line that may or may not ever be established. But this is where we must go back to this concept that, yes, we are subverted, and who is really working for whom in our government? And what would the intelligence community, who really is command and control of a James Clapper, of a John Brennan, Is it totally homegrown, or are they working for foreign masters? Is it a world government, you know, ideal that they have? We don't know. We are absolutely running blind, and that's because we are not allowed to look.
Diana, you do look carefully, and I think with great professionalism and clarity. I hope you come back to us again next week, and we'll talk with you as well, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.